This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Bart Walker.
Hey, good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. Lieutenant Michael Rogers is with us, and Sergeant Jason Brown, both from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. First of all, good morning to both of you.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us today. We're going to talk about virtual reality. Big these days. Everybody's wondering, does one trump the other one, so to speak?
Sure.
You're doing a training program that is virtual reality, and you're wondering, is the virtual reality training better than traditional training? And then to take it a step farther, MTSU is working with you, and they're going to study the results on that. Tell us about this.
That's pretty close. This project is a grant that's funded by the Department of Justice, and basically it is a three-year project, and the question is, can you be as effective in virtual reality as you can with traditional role player training? So we put together this program, and we're building scenarios and building rubrics for grading, and MTSU is doing research, and it's quite extensive. So in order to manage all of that, Sergeant Brown, he was put in that position. That's his whole job. That's all he does for the next 3 years is try to answer that question. So and doing an excellent job so far, because it's been a lot more challenges than we originally thought.
Let's go to Sergeant Brown, since this is your bag for the next few years. What are some of the things that you're doing virtually, so to speak?
Well, the purpose of the grant is to learn if virtual reality can augment training, especially in the fields of de-escalation and crisis intervention. And so what we're looking at with that in itself is, one, can you replace the traditional role players that are involved in the crisis intervention training? So you'd have 29 hours of training, and then you'd have roughly 11 hours of virtual or role-playing scenarios where officers would get to use the skills they learned. What we were looking at is can we use the virtual reality, place an officer in a situation that is more realistic than in a classroom setting by placing them in a person's home or on a traffic stop or in a business, and have that interaction done with a virtual character that would be voiced and driven by a trainer that is monitoring the scenario.
So a human is thinking of what's... This is not artificial intelligence dreaming up the questions and reactions.
No, that's probably a couple of years in the future, but I definitely looked into that. Looked at ChatGTP. With ChatGTP, you can have interactions with the AI, and they are lifelike and stuff like that. I just can't import it into the scenario, but it would be amazing to be able to do it that way.
How real does this feel? I mean, for the officer who's doing the training, do they feel really as if they're part of it?
I would say so, just anecdotally speaking. We've had beta testing and doing scenarios with some officers and stuff like that, and the realism is there. When they go to step off a curb that's not really there, they actually try to step down, and we ended up having to institute a safety officer behind them to keep them from falling and interacting with the characters physically and stuff like that.
So they're wearing the electronic mask?
Yeah, they have a full visor. They wear headphones, so it simulates like road noise, dogs barking. When they're interacting with one of the characters, it's directional. So if one of the characters is speaking to their left, the audio comes in from the left earphone, and if someone over here on the right starts yelling, then that comes in. So it's very immersive. The way the system works is that there's four sensors that track the person's location inside the scenario, and it's a one for one. So if they take four steps in the scenario, they're taking four steps in real life. So the larger the training space that we have, the larger the environment we can set up. So if we have a 30 by 30 square foot training area, we can set a scenario up in someone's home, and they can navigate from like the kitchen into the living room, down a hallway, into a bedroom, and the whole time dealing with fictional characters that are placed into the scenario.
So you can pretty well create any type of real surrounding.
Absolutely, yes.
Because we follow news stories doing our news here at the station. We hear stories like the officers are out on the interstate, the traffic is not slowing down much, but there's an accident on the side of the road and it's broken off into a squabble. People are really getting heated. And so you got two serious situations. You got a heavy traffic flow going, I say 70, but probably 80 or 90.
At least.
Easily on 24, yes.
And officers trying to keep control of a serious, volatile situation on the side of the road.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I've noticed with this training is that it definitely highlights an officer's situational awareness. Like I've set officers into like a traffic stop situation where they're dealing with an irate driver and then they've stepped too far out in the middle of the road and looked to their left and there's a car that almost hit them. And like, you know, and then that was actually one of the, that was one of the times that we decided that, oh, we definitely need someone to grab a hold of him because he jumped out of the way and ended up running into a wall that had a TV on it.
You know,
in real life, we're like, oh, okay. Because the realism's definitely there.
So it sounds like it's going to be a phenomenal end result. I mean, it's so real. You don't have that realism when you're playing. I remember I was going through the Citizens Police Academy at the Sheriff's Office when they were building the new high-rise jail. That shows you how long ago that was. But they were using that jail, the new one, which was not finished yet, they were using that to train in, and they had different scenarios that they created there. Pretty realistic.
It is.
But this is as realistic as you can get without being in the real situation.
It definitely is. So there's definitely pros and cons to it. So the training that Jason's referring to, the crisis intervention training, I actually just went through that training last week. And there's definitely things that you can do with role players that you can't do with virtual reality. So, you know, such as emotion. Like it's very hard to, in virtual reality, you can't create, you can sort of with the voice and the emotion, but you definitely can't create tears or, you know, shaking of the body. You know, like if we were going to do like an Alzheimer interaction, you know, we can't replicate the shaking of the body or maybe the those emotional things. However, with virtual reality, we can integrate the environment, you know, so we can make it in a house. We can make it on the side of the road. We can do a hospital. We can do a jail. And we can also plug in weapons. One of the most interesting things that I've seen is in a role player scenario, when you're interacting with a person, you know, in the back of your mind somewhere, you know that there's no chance that there's going to be any sort of, you know, violence intervention kind of, there's going to be no use of force because you're a person and I'm not going to use force on you. However, in virtual reality, they do have their weapon system. So they have a pistol that they hold in their hand or a rifle or, you know, pepper spray, taser, all those things. And you can actually deploy those weapons in virtual reality. And that virtual character can, you know, attack you, shoot at you, pull knives on you. So it's really interesting just by putting a person in the scenario where they know that they have a pistol, we'll have the virtual character just, you know, hold up their ID or, you know, pull up their cell phone and they'll jump because they think, you know, it's about to be so, but you can't replicate that in real life because you understand that person's not going to. So there's definitely pros and cons both ways. And that's kind of the whole premise of this. You know, a lot of people say, well, virtual reality is really cool, but you know, will it really work? Like, is that really a thing? And so that's ultimately what we're trying to do.
Now, MTSU is working with you on this. They're going to be studying the end results. Is this something that's applicable to more than just police work, and they're going to look at spreading it over an even broader area?
So the way it's designed right now, there's a couple of pieces in the grant that require or ask us to work with community, you know, and also other agencies. So right now we're doing what you would describe as patrol law enforcement, you know, people who are on the street answering calls, but we are also doing the detention officers are working with us. So there is an application that we can do jail type scenarios where they just have a taser and they're interacting with inmates. So that's definitely, and we have discussed the potential for crisis people in hospitals, mental health professionals who might, you know, encounter, because it's very good for verbal de-escalation skills. So we can replicate some of those things without the, you know, real potential for violence. So there is an application to outside of law enforcement, and we are kind of trying to build some partnerships, and Jason has lots of people he's partnered with that he can tell you about. But yes, there is application outside of law enforcement. For the purposes of our grant, we kind of have to focus on that for now. But outside of that 3-year window, this is all, the equipment is ours. The sheriff's office owns it. So after that 3 years, we can kind of do whatever we want with it. And we might start trying to do some of that.
You mentioned working with persons who are mentally challenged.
Sure.
That seems to be, unfortunately, one of the biggest areas.
Sure.
That law enforcement is involved in, with the closing decades ago of facilities that took care of hospitals, basically, that took care of mentally challenged persons. It's been turned over to you, and you don't have the background.
Sure.
Tell us how this can help you de-escalate issues, situations.
Well, it's exactly like you said. We normally wouldn't have a background in this. Like in policing in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, it was strictly law enforcement. It was, you know, determining a crime, determining a person who did it, you know, making the required arrest, and then going through the legal system. But through the late 90s and, you know, early 2000s, it's been shown that there was a real need for officers to be able to engage with people with mental illness and intellectual disabilities, along, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, Asperger's, and along autism. Those lines,
yeah.
autism.
Yeah.
So with that was when we started coming up with training that involved that, and like crisis intervention training is the direct result of it. It was based off a Memphis model. The Memphis Police Department came up with it in the mid 90s, I believe. And they pioneered it along with UT, was it UT? And they came up with a very good program, and they've pushed it out to law enforcement. I'm CIT trained. Lieutenant here's CIT trained.
What is CIT?
The crisis intervention training.
Okay.
And that, so we've actually been taught how to respond to these situations and to determine if these people that have these, you know, illnesses and conditions, if they're harm to themselves or they're harm to the public in general, and how, and giving us avenues to go about getting them help. So part of what I've done with the community outreach is I've partnered with Volunteer Behavioral Health and also the Mental Health Co-op, and they've agreed to help teach and go over a lot of this training with us, and so to make it better. Matter of fact, Voluntary Behavioral Health just opened up a new crisis unit over off Medical Center Parkway. And so if we come across a person that, let's say, doesn't meet the statutory requirements for an involuntary committal, but they're definitely in a crisis, you know, so they're not homicidal or suicidal, literally at that point, there's really nothing we can do. We end up having to let them go on their way because they have rights just like everyone else, even if they are in a crisis. But so with Volunteer Behavioral Health's new crisis center, their crisis unit, if we talk to them and they agree and volunteer, we can take them there and they can get stabilized and get help, meetings and counseling, along with they also offer therapeutic drugs and along those lines to help get their mental condition stabilized. So right now, just doing this program, it's opened my eyes to a lot of the avenues that we have as law enforcement here to get our citizens help.
Now, are they always, what is the cause of their crisis? Is it always drugs? Is it something else?
It can be anything. It can be personal matters in their life. They had a breakup. They could have depression. A lot of times, people go into crisis because they've lost their insurance, they can't afford their medications. Their medications at one time was working good, and they were stable. And then, you know, insurance come along, says, hey, we're not going to pay for this medication. The doctor prescribes something different that's supposed to be similar. The dosages get messed up. Next thing you know, they start spiraling. Sometimes it is drug related, the codependency issues. A lot of times people use illicit drugs to treat their own illnesses, per se. So then you'll have a drug dependent person that also has a mental illness, and you know, and they'll spiral. And then sometimes you just have drug induced psychoses that we have to deal with.
We're going to pause for just a moment. When we come back, we've got some questions coming in on texting. We also would like to continue, because when you mentioned that things sometimes spiral out of control, mm-hmm. Bills go up, things of this could happen to anybody.
Absolutely.
So we're gonna look at that a little closer. What do you do as a family to help your loved one who's spiraling out of control? We'll be right back. Mary Ellen Evans calls Adam's Place home.
So this space here at Adam's Place is large enough for anybody to create the same environment they had at home. Plus, it has things like 9-foot ceilings with architectural detail. So that gives it a feeling of spaciousness. So it's a wonderful place to call home.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adam's Place. Call me for more information about Adam's Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Adam's Place.
Hi, this is Ryan with Tire World Laverne. Here to serve all your automotive needs in Rutherford County, we welcome all your fleet and commercial accounts along with all your regular routine maintenance. Tire World, a hometown family business you can trust.
One of the things when we were looking at trying to craft our menu to help those who are dieting is the side dishes. A lot of times we're so used to eating starches and unhealthy side dishes. In addition to our spinach, which we've had on the menu from the start, we've added zucchini and green beans, but we've also added broccoli. The broccoli is properly steamed, so it's not too soft and not too hard. Please have your family join our family for lunch or dinner 7 days a week at Demas's.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Lessons, we got that. Drums and every other instrument with strings or keys. Music World and Drummer's Den, the one-stop shop where you have everything that you might need. Ukuleles, violins, things that they're not expecting to find just everywhere they go. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course. Music World and Drummer's Den.
Good Neighbor Talk covers issues you won't hear anywhere else. They're local issues. WGNS, AM, FM, online.
Hey, welcome back. Happy birthday to Grayson Rigsby, our winner today of that delicious banana pudding from Slick Big Barbecue. Grayson, hope you enjoy that. And congratulations to Nicholas Ballsbaugh, our good neighbor of the day. Nicholas will be receiving flowers from Jenny Harrison and her family at Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts. You need to get with our friends at Ryan's. If you have a friend who's having a birthday or a big celebration of one kind or another, send them a goodie from Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts, locally owned and operated. Shop local, absolutely. Welcome back. Our phone number is 615-893-1450. Fascinating topic today. Visiting with us from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, Lieutenant Michael Rogers and Sergeant Jason Brown. The Sheriff's Office is involved in a sort of an interesting virtual reality training program that they are doing in various situations, crisis situations. And the study is funded by a grant from MTSU, who will in turn study the effects. We say shop local. We encourage people to do things local. This is a double whammy on us. Your local, the sheriff's office is local, but MTSU is too, and you're working together.
We are. And just to kind of clarify that, so the grant, we actually the sheriff's office sought the grant. It's our grant, and we have partner with MTSU to do the study. So the grant funding comes through to the sheriff's office, and we reimburse MTSU for their expertise and the research and the study. So it was just so the people understand it actually comes through the sheriff's
office.
So
you shopped local?
We did. Yeah, absolutely. Now, and it comes from a federal Department of Justice grant, but it is managed by us, if that makes sense.
We have a question here from a listener who's saying, I don't know if this is a crisis situation, but it's sometimes a crisis in our family. My son's going through, I don't know whether it's his teenage years, hormones or what, but he melts down quite a bit. When he runs out of money or doesn't get something, has a bout with his girlfriend, I sometimes don't know what to do. Is that the type of situation you're talking about?
Yes, we deal with those situations quite often where parents, for one reason or another, can't handle, you know, what's going on in the household, and they'll call us and we'll come in and hopefully mediate.
What's causing that? Is it more pressure today than it used to be, or
I'm not a clinician. I can't speak to the hows and whys. I've been taught to identify symptoms and stuff. I can't diagnose. That's not in my realm. But just anecdotally speaking, life is so fast these days. You have social media. Everyone's in everyone's business, and it's a now society. And I think that in itself is, in my personal opinion, part of the problem is that people can't disconnect. They lack the social interactions that they used to have. No one has a one-on-one conversation anymore. It's always through texts. There's always double meanings to stuff. And it's just very impersonal. And it's, you know, and I know from my personal experience with my own children that, you know, it's like, hey, you got to put the phone down. We got to talk. You know, you have to actually interact with the person, you know.
Interesting. I have never heard it explained that way, but that makes so much. Everything is so impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
It's all through electronics.
Absolutely.
So you've lost that ability to talk to each other and reason.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you take that to the next notch or two up. When you are robbing a bank or, you know, doing something with a firearm, you don't know how to communicate with people. So, and you've learned that through electronic games, maybe, and you shoot them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the things that I've noticed because before I became a sergeant and was put over this program, I was a training officer for seven or eight years. And I noticed with the, you know, as I got older and as the recruits got younger and younger that I was getting, that we were having to go back and like teach them how to interact with the public. We'd have to like, you know, hey, what we're going to do today is I want you to go stand out inside in front of this gas station. And I just want you to strike up a conversation with somebody. We're not looking for anything criminal, but you need to learn how to talk to people and mm-hmm. it, like just basic stuff like that. And so sure. I notice if we're seeing it with people that want to do law enforcement and want to become cops, I know it's across the board with the rest of society and especially of the younger generations. It's just it's hard to talk to people. I mean,
what happens when they go out and try, you know, they're trying to learn those skills. How do you communicate? They learn them, but the one that they're talking with, they're not learning them. What kind of an obstacle does that create?
A pretty large one sometimes. I mean, it people's attention spans just seem to be, you know, short these days. Like, you know, like for instance, my son can't sit there and watch a 2-hour movie, you know, without getting fidgety and wanting to pick up his phone and all that stuff. And like conversations are the same way, especially dealing with some of the citizens. It's just, it's hard to get across what needs to be, you know, like asking for information, trying to figure out what's going on. You know, it's tough. It's definitely law enforcement's changed since I started 16 years ago.
Now, since MTSU is working with you to study the effects of these virtual reality training, I wonder if they would also study with people changing and their attention span changing. Are we going to start seeing movies going from an hour and a half that are to 2 hours down to 15 or 20 minutes, TV shows not being an hour?
I hope not, because I'm a big movie buff and I would hate to see something like that happen. Well, one of the questions that we were proposed, that was asked in the research, was, is this research making officers less safe by putting us in a position where we're trying to reach out? Are we negating some of our officer safety skills that would normally keep us safe in an interaction, like reactionary gap distance, stuff like that? Because it's always been said that you need to get, it's, we always called it the 21-foot rule. Like, if you're dealing with somebody that is potentially hostile or, you know, whatever, it would take a person to pull a knife at a 21-foot distance and cross that span of, you know, that gap of space between you and that person less than a second. They can cross that 21 feet before you'd have a chance to register in your mind that, hey, this person's a threat, they have a knife, I have to defend myself, and for all that mental action, and then for me to initiate going for my gun, drawing it, and being able to engage that person as a threat. So, you know, that was one of the questions that was proposed by Professor Ben Stickle, was, is this training inadvertently making officers less safe? So that's one of the training questions we're asking, along with, is this effective? So
we have a question here from a listener who said they are thankful you brought that up, and they said that is today's reaction to police officers always suing them, threatening them, condemning them, is that creating another challenge? You have to think, am I safe before I draw my weapon? Then do you ask yourself, am I going to be sued? Am I going to be fired? Am I going to be what? You know, does that create another challenge for you mentally? While you have a second, did you say, 1 second to react?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to ask yourself all these other, how can you do that?
So I think that probably, so first of all, I can't speak for all police officers, but in my perception, while that kind of attitude is portrayed, you know, through social media and in fact, traditional media, from my perspective as a police officer, that's not necessarily the case. As I'm out and about and I'm interacting with people, overwhelmingly people support police.
Especially here in Rutherford County.
Yeah, people are always, you know, thanking us for what we do. Even dealing with people who may be in crisis or who may have committed a crime, people that, you know, I've arrested have thanked me for intervening in their lives and you know, helping with the situation. So the first thing to note is, I completely understand where that person's coming from, because that's kind of the storyline that comes at you from social media, right? So, however, I do think that enters our minds, right? So even acknowledging that it's probably not as big or as
if we didn't have a supportive community here that some places doesn't,
right?
Like, you know, if we were in a larger city or...
Do you think it's the way you react to people that creates that?
So,
I mean, I've never seen an officer around here that wasn't a real professional.
Sure. And I think what they're getting at is, does that enter our minds when we are we at risk because we hesitate, because we're worried about the lawsuits and the things? Again, I can't speak for all officers, but I know... At the sheriff's office, I know my leadership supports me, and I know that they trust me to make good decisions, and I know that I trust my guys to make good decisions, and we're kind of given the support that we need to feel confident doing what we are trained and that we're supposed to do. And that's what we try to instill in the young, you know, we hire so many, I say young kids, I mean, they're old enough, I'm old enough to be their father, you know, the guys that we're hiring, but that's one of the things that we are really, we really invested in, is making sure that they know they have the support, that they're well-trained, and also that they have, you know, this type of training so that they know how to deal with these situations, because it comes down to confidence, right? So they know how to react to these things before it's new to them and they're just kind of making it up on the fly. So I appreciate that question. But I think it's probably more in the media's story and not so much in an officer's mind, if that makes sense.
Now, virtual reality training, which is, you're on the cutting edge again. I mean, you look at the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, you were on the cutting edge with the SRO program.
Oh, absolutely.
You're on the cutting edge with this one. You're always on the cutting edge. Tell us, have you had a full class go through this virtual reality training, or is it?
Well, right now, we're still in the planning stages.
Oh, this is planning. Okay.
Yeah, we have a three-year grant, and the first year is the planning phase. So it's the purchase of the equipment, finding the sergeant that will be running it, along with setting up the actual study. So we meet with MTSU twice a month, and we sit down for about an hour, and we go over what's been done, what needs to be done, what the actual objectives of the study are, how to obtain those objectives. We're looking at the training scenarios that we're developing. One of the major components for the training scenarios is realism. And so what I've done is I've drawn off my past experiences in law enforcement over 16 years about situations I've been in, and I've put those on paper. And then at some point, I've turned them over to our mental health professionals, and I'm like, how does a person that is going to be acting this way, like a person with a bipolar and they're in a manic phase, what are some of the things that you have seen, and how would I need to portray that character to bring that realism to it? And then we've also partnered with community groups. The first real meeting isn't scheduled until August, but I'm going to sit down with them, and I'm going to take what I've developed, what the mental health professionals, the mental health co-op, and volunteer behavioral health have helped me create, and I'm going to turn it over to them. I'm like, how does this apply in your life? Have you seen situations like that? Is there stuff that you would like to see addressed that you've seen, personally? And then I'll take that back, and then I'll combine it all, and then I'll have anywhere from 16 to 20 set scenarios that I'll be able to run the officers through that, have been vetted by mental health professionals and have community input. And then, run them through those. And at the end, those will be studied and graded by MTSU and determined that, okay, hey, this training's effective. The use of the VR has been effective. Or, at the end of the day, they might say, no, this is a great technology. It's just not quite there yet. We need to revisit this in 10 years. So, that's the actual question. Is this viable training? And then this can be spread out to other agencies. It can be adopted for other purposes. One of the things I've liked is a lot of times officers, it's they don't have a bad encounter with the public. When I say bad, I mean like a hostile interaction. An irate driver that was upset because they're late for work, they've been stopped for speeding, they don't have time to deal with it, and they're just argumentative. And to be able to set up a scenario that portrays that and then teach the officer the right ways to deal with that situation and how to de-escalate the situation, how to not let it spiral out of control, and to keep composure and stuff like that. Because as I was saying earlier, a lot of these young officers, they're not exposed to that until they're already exposed to that on the street. And if there's a way for me to give them some mental cushion, I guess I don't know if that's the best way to describe it, but if I can cushion them into a situation like that that has that feel of realism before they actually encounter it in real life and have to make a decision, that could be detrimental to them, detrimental to the department, detrimental to the society or the citizens of Rutherford County. If I can, I guess maybe inoculate them to dealing with that in an earlier, earlier setting, so that they're like, okay, hey, I've been cussed at on the street, and I've been called every name, but whatever. But my given name, that's one of those things that I find that could be very helpful to the officers coming up.
Here's an interesting question from a listener. They're saying that they have a friend who went through the adult training program. They had gotten a ticket, and they could either pay a fine or go to a class and learn how to maybe smooth out some rough edges. Is this something that could be used instead of those classes? Have a virtual reality school to teach you how to react properly if you're in a road rage situation, or if you're in another a situation where it could become really dangerous.
Well, I know this, even before the virtual reality, we had programs that met those lines, or, you know, like the seatbelt simulator, you know, like it's a mechanical device. It's on an incline. You put a seat on, you sit in it. It's a car seat. You put your seatbelt on and then it slides down the incline. And it comes to a sudden stop and it shows you what an impact feels like at 7 miles an hour or 10 miles an hour. So, we've been trying to incorporate stuff like that for years in law enforcement as, you know, a way to teach the community. And, I could easily see this going in that route, where, you know, they're in we have DUI, simulation goggles where you put these on and it makes it shows they make you feel like you're impaired. And so, but yeah, as far as this virtual reality goes, I absolutely see that there could be a potential for that and for, like, you know, just operating a motor vehicle and, like, you know, obeying the rules of the road and like learning what the traffic signs are and, you know, the proper way to come to a stop at a stoplight and not cross over the stop bar and, you know, stuff along those lines.
Sergeant Jason Brown and Lieutenant Michael Rogers from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office are with us this morning. Our final break coming up right now. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Capstar is now a division of Old National Bank. You'll notice some changes as we complete the transition to Old National Bank. The Murphy Spread team that you know and trust at Capstar are always ready to serve you. We'll temporarily use Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, until the transition's complete. As always, we're ready to serve you at Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, member FDIC.
At Budge Tire Pros, we sell all major brands of tires, and we invite you to stop by today for that next set of tires. Or maybe you need us to check out your vehicle before you head out of town. We offer everything from brakes to batteries, alignments, and more. No appointments necessary, just stop on by.
I'm Allison Mitchell with Bud's Tire Pros. We're located on East Main Street, exactly 3 miles from the town square, 1 mile past Rutherford Boulevard. Visit us online at budstireprostn.com.
Welcome back. Our number is 615-893-1450. We have about 7 minutes left in our broadcast, so if you have a question or a comment, text it to us quickly, or it'll all be history. 615-893-1450. We're talking about how the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office is working with MTSU. They are creating a program that, through virtual reality, will be training officers. And then MTSU is going to study the effects and see which is better, in-person or virtual reality. And I know you're not supposed to form an opinion on something.
Sure.
Do you have an opinion? How do you feel this is going to turn out? Do you think it's going to be pro-virtual or pro-real life?
So, personally, if you're looking down the road, I absolutely feel like the future of law enforcement training will involve virtual reality, hands down, 100%. I don't know exactly in what capacity. This is the model that we are using, this particular technology. It's called Apex Officer. It's a company based out of Las Vegas. It's really good software. But as fast as technology changes and updates, you know, I'm sure it will be something else cutting edge right around the corner. And I don't know that it's, you know, improvements with, you know, graphical quality or, you know, how that works, but yes, I absolutely feel like virtual reality or augmented reality will be the future of law enforcement training. Absolutely.
Do you use electronic weapons that shoot laser beams or something?
So, yes. In theory, yes. That's kind of exactly how it works. The weapons that we have are, well, they're airsoft pistols. So they look and feel exactly like a, we carry Glock at the sheriff's office. It looks and feels exactly like a Glock. When you have it in your hand, you can't tell the difference. You pull the trigger, it, you know, it clicks and there's a little bit of feedback. It feels absolutely like a real weapon system. So when you're in the virtual reality environment and you pull your weapon up to aim, you can see the back of your weapon and you can aim, you know, just like you would in real life. You, the brain doesn't really know the difference. So, and when you fire, yes, there are, it will track whether you hit or missed or how many hits and misses, the time frame it took for you to get that done. We can actually stop the simulation and do a replay, and the officer can watch himself. Okay. So it's kind of like, if I were to replay our conversation, I could go stand over there and look at myself, where I was, what I was doing in relation to you when I started firing, where my shots went, which ones were hits, which ones were misses. And I can pause the simulation and move around and look at it from this angle. You know, the officer can interact with that environment to kind of evaluate exactly what he did and what he could have done better. So it's, yes, it's
I remember
very cool.
When you built your outdoor, this just hit me, when you built your outdoor firing range at the sheriff's office,
yeah,
there was a lot of conversation about it, of hearing it and things of that sort. Do you get the same benefit with virtual reality training of shooting your weapon, being a better marksman?
They're analog. It's very similar, but it's not quite real life. There is feedback, but the recoil is not there. The trigger pressure is different. It's a good training tool, but it can't substitute using the range. Back to what you were saying earlier, the realism and stuff like that. One of the things I did was I've reached out to our Citizens Police Academy, and I got with the training there, the sergeant over that. He was supposed to set up a training scenario for the Citizens Police Academy of shoot, don't shoot scenarios and use simmunitions on the range. And it would be like paper targets and volunteers wearing the protective gear in case they were shot with one of the simmunitions, which is just like a paint bullet. So what I did with him was, I was like, I can use this as, it's training for me, first off, because I'm still learning the system, but I can also run the Citizens Police Academy through. And some of the feedback I got from them was the realism. So, like, I was taking our Citizens Police Academy students, and I was putting them into, let's say, like a domestic situation, and they had to respond to an argument in progress, or they were, you know, involved in a traffic stop that happened to go bad, because it was the whole idea is shoot or no shoot, and it was trying to show them the split second differences that, you know, the split seconds that it takes for an officer to make those decisions and the differences in outcomes. And one of the things that the feedback I received was that, you know, some of it was anecdotal. Like, people are like, I don't know, I couldn't do your job. Like, that was some of the most stressful stuff I've ever been in, which is actually a compliment to me, because it portrays what we have to deal with on a daily basis. You know, most of the times is it can be a very stressful job. And then just the fact that citizens can actually get an experience of that and kind of understand, oh, that officer overreacted. Oh, he took a bladed stance to me. He backed up, like, and they don't understand why. But then when you put them in that same situation, and then they got to start thinking outside of those normal lines, like, oh, hey, I have to, you know, I'm watching out for my well-being along with yours. I need to protect myself by and also do my job at the same time. And so I thought that was pretty awesome.
We have about 2 minutes left in our broadcast this morning, and we're talking this morning about a new program that they're trying at the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, and that program is training through virtual reality. You're both saying it looks like it's going to be phenomenal. It's giving training of situations that you hope they don't ever need,
exactly.
But they probably will.
Yeah, and I think the biggest takeaway from this is the de-escalation skills that we hope to teach them. So in traditional law enforcement, if you were to encounter maybe somebody on the street and they were aggressive, and you always have the option to just go hands-on and take them to jail, right? What we hope to instill through this training is how to maybe talk down that situation so that you don't have to use the force, and we can just kind of make it safer for everybody. That's kind of where we want to go with it.
Absolutely. The scenarios that we developed are all winnable. And when I say winnable is that there's always a good outcome. If the officer screws up or they do something inappropriate, or, you know, they don't follow the teaching that they learn in the class, then the situation can be escalated, or it can also be de-escalated. So there's never an aha, I got you moment. This is training that can be used in real life, and it is, you know, hopefully winnable in real life too. Like every situation that I've been in, there's always a potential for a good outcome, and I want the officers to be able to recognize that and proceed towards it.
Want to say a special thank you this morning to Lieutenant Michael Rogers and Sergeant Jason Brown for joining us, and congratulations on the great job that the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office is doing.
Thank you. Appreciate you having us.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.